He is the main protege now of Dr. D'Adamo. So the world famous Dr. D'Adamo, who's written many books, including Eat Right for Your Blood Type. And we're going to be talking about that and the genotype diet, and then also a special program that was developed to help doctors figure out the best treatments for very difficult to treat illnesses, which is called OPUS. And we'll be talking about also the research that Dr. Brody's doing on different types of things like autoimmune disease. And oh, he's a great guest, and I'm so glad he was able to share some of his vacation weekend with us. And so he'll be coming up at 9 o'clock in about 10 minutes, a little over 10 minutes. So I'm excited to have him on there. And in the meantime, I'm really glad to be here and to discuss what's new in natural medicine. And there's quite a number of things going on in natural medicine these days. One of the things that I'm always interested in is the nutrients that different medications deplete you of, and I'll be lecturing on that at the Restorative Medicine Conference in September. So that's going to be very interesting. I'm going to be talking about different medications and why they steal nutrients from your body. And, you know, not that we're against medications, of course, sometimes we need them, but at least you'll need to take them intelligently. And one thing people can do is they can go to the website MyTavin, which is MyTavin, MyTavin. MyTavin is an excellent website, which then you put the medication that you're on in the MyTavin website, and then if it's multiple medications, there's room to put as many as you want. And then you hit search, and what it does is, I guess it goes through the literature, often through the National Library of Medicine, which is available to everyone, by the way, if they go to PubMed, if you put PubMed, PubMed, into your browser, or you put it into Google, when you go to Google or whatever you use, you can then access the National Library of Medicine for free, which is, at least you get abstracts. A lot of times you can't get the full article because you have to pay for that, or if you're a member of academia or some type of a school that's subscribed to that, they can get all that information for you. But sometimes you get a nice abstract, at least, of the particular study that you're looking for. And in this case, we're talking about the drug nutrient depletion, which nutrients, which include B vitamins and vitamin C and CoQ10 and so many other nutrients, are depleted by various drugs. And this is important because if you're taking these medications, and they are very important sometimes to do that, you should at least be having a conversation with your doctor about which nutrients. And they might not, I would say 9 out of 10 of them are not going to be aware of this information. It turns out that some of the side effects of maybe some of these drugs may actually be partially in due to the nutrients that they deplete from your body. So, for instance, it's interesting that aspirin, if you look through aspirin, which I've heard from some high-up authorities that they're thinking about taking a lot of these aspirin and NSAIDs and making them back into prescription. I don't know how they can do that, but this is what I was apprised of. But nonetheless, the aspirin depletes your body of vitamin C and bioflavonoids, and that is extremely important for keeping your body from bleeding and falling apart, as vitamin C is an essential step in the manufacture of collagen, and collagen is all, I mean, they think, they meaning many of the scientists think that the first, we could go on to music if you want more, if you want to bring on the guests later, because I'm hearing that on the air. So anyway, yeah, vitamin C is very good to prevent scurvy and things like that. So, but, so we're going to go to some music and we're going to see if we can get in touch with our illustrious guest, Dr. Robert Brody, who's supposed to be coming on at 9 o'clock. So we'll take a musical break. Just wanted to say hi to everyone and welcome to Integrated Wellness. Stay tuned right here to WPKN Bridgeport.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. And yourself?
I am fine, thank you. I'm going to let you speak with Dr. Z.
Good morning, Dr. Brody.
Good morning, Dr. Z. How you doing?
Good. I finally got you to come on the radio. I'm so happy.
Oh, I'm excited too.
Great. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to WPKN Bridgeport 89.5 FM. Listener-supported free speech alternative radio. And my name is Dr. Eugene Zamproner, affectionately known as Dr. Z. Here with Maura Joseph, we bring you Integrative Wellness every other Sunday. And this segment is called The Natural House Call. And with me is Dr. Robert Brody. And Dr. Brody, you know, has quite a bit of experience in many different fields, such as homeopathy and nutrition and naturopathic medicine. But one thing that's interesting about Dr. Brody is he's doing a lot of work in what's called generative medicine, of where he is a member and one of the VPs at the Institute of Naturopathic Generative Medicine. We're going to be talking a lot about that. He's also part of the Connecticut Naturopathic Physicians Association and Pennsylvania Association of Naturopathic Physicians and the AANP, American Association of Naturopathic Physicians. He does a lot of volunteer work, Dr. Brody, helping out the community. He's traveled, taken doctors and naturopathic doctors to Guatemala and has done all kinds of work, including even helping me out in my self-defense class. Here at on the University of Bridgeport campus, and he is a I don't know what actually is your title here, Dr. Brody. Are you a professor or a adjunct professor of clinical medicine or something like that?
I'm an adjunct professor. I teach the biochemical individuality class.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. We talked a little bit about your background, and so I know you're a UB grad and you have also a degree in nutrition. Tell us a little bit about what drew you into natural medicine and then eventually to study biochemical individuality and a whole subject called glycobiology, blood typing, phenotype, a lot of the work that Dr. D'Adamo pioneered.
Mm-hmm. Well, it all kind of really started with my father, who's a pretty well-known homeopath and nutritionist. He's been practicing in Pennsylvania for just about 40 years or so. And I never, ever thought I was going to go into medicine itself. I actually graduated originally with an undergraduate degree in adventure recreation from Greenmount College in Pulteney, Vermont. And I was working as a professional whitewater kayak instructor all over the East Coast.
Hmm.
When I was actually done one of my seasons, I actually moved up to Vermont and worked in a local high school in the special education department. I was working with children in science and history classes, you know, helping them out with their studies. And I came really upset that I saw them on all these different medications and they weren't actually getting any benefit from them, or the majority of them were not getting any benefit from the medications. So that led me into investigating this thing called naturopathic medicine, which I've actually never heard of before. After doing some research and a couple conversations with my father, I decided to go back to school pre-medicine and do all that, you know, like general chemistries and organic chemistry and physics, and decided to attend the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine because I thought that there's a better way, and I found that better way in natural medicines.
Great. So glad to have you as a colleague and in the field there. And then, of course, you know, you took the program, the four-year doctoral program, and then what steered you towards looking at and studying and immersing yourself in kind of what Dr. Diadamo's work? And we should probably just preface that by saying, what are some of the things that Dr. Diadamo has pioneered in the field of natural medicine, first of all, and then how did you kind of follow in his footsteps?
Well, you know, most people know that Dr. Diadamo wrote the Eat Right for Your Type book and really kind of made the blood type diet the diet that it is today, the well-known diet that's helped thousands and thousands of people. And his work was really trying to get to the basic level of everyone's completely different. You know, there's 7.5 billion people out there, and there's not one size-fits-all diet for everyone. So he really, back in the early 90s, broke that down into four basic diet types for different people. And with that, you know, a lot of people like him because he was trying to make that individualized approach. Mm-hmm. You know, from there, you know, my story comes into play with a medical condition that I was battling with since I was a young child, acne. And I tried literally every natural treatment out there to control my acne, all the medications, homeopathy, everything. I couldn't get it under control. It would just come back with a vengeance after a little bit of time. That led me into trying to find a diet that would work in a different way. So that led me into the Swami diet, which later, the result of my acne came from, you know, dairy and actually wheat consumption. If I take those things out of my diet, I actually don't have a battle with acne anymore.
Mm. Interesting. So you talked about a couple things there that folks probably we need to talk about. First of all, let's spend some time and talk a little bit about the blood type diet. So, you know, from I was one of the Dr. Diadamo's original interns and almost residents working at his office in Greenwich when he was, even before he wrote his book. And I remember doing a lot of research on his book. That was back in the days when there was no internet, Dr. Brody. I had to bring bags of nickels to the photocopy machine and photocopy all these papers for Dr. D. But I photocopied some very interesting books on blood type and the relationship of blood type and diet and populations and where the populations were. And then I found these very, very interesting book called Lectins, Their Biological Properties in Medicine by Nathan Sharon and his colleague, I forget his name, but two Israeli researchers. And that's kind of, I remember Dr. Diadamo's eyes lighting up when I gave him these books. He probably still has the photocopied version of these things. And that kind of got him started in looking at this whole field. But why blood type? Is blood type a misnomer? Is it really like a particular body type? Do you have these things that are that make your blood a certain characteristic? Are these all in your body? Maybe you can take people from kind of elementary school to a more secondary school education on this very interesting concept.
I sure can. I kind of just want to start off with, you know, why do we have blood type? You know, many people think that we have blood type because we want to go to the hospital and get blood donations and we need it for transfusions. But, you know, we are part of nature as humans. You know, we're part of nature and how we interact to the outside world. One of those ways is going to be our immune system and our blood type. You know, many things can have blood type on them, not just your blood. It can be different mucous membranes and different cells. It kind of acts as a fingerprint, as you will, or a specific address that makes you unique. Mm. And we've seen, you know, over the years and all the courses of studies, all these bad diseases and plagues go through human history. Everything from the bubonic plague to cholera, and all these things are actually blood type specific. And it comes down to, if you're blood type O, and that's what you have on all your cells in your body, you have blood type O on it. And if something comes in your body that's blood type A, it's a bacteria or a virus that has blood type A sugars on it, your body's going to then recognize that thing as bad, that bacteria as bad, and go about the process of removing it. So you can kind of see that it acts as a basic immune system.
Hmm.
And we take that role and we apply it to diet itself, when you're consuming something bad, your body's going to respond to it and try to remove it if it's not going to promote life. And that's really what, you know, work what you were doing with Dr. Diadamo in the early stages of trying to figure out why that was happening.
Right.
And it kind of goes back, and just like you were saying, this concept of lectin. And the easiest way to explain a lectin is tennis balls and Velcro. So if you think of, you have a whole bunch of nice, worn tennis balls, you know, type that you were playing with your dog for a very long time, they're very fluffy in the edges. I take about 10 of these, and I throw them into a box, and I take a whole bunch of Velcro, and I throw it in that box as well, and I shake it up. Eventually, all that Velcro is going to get stuck on those tennis balls. I'm not going to have this one giant clump of tennis balls. Now, if I take the same reaction that happens inside your body, but instead of tennis balls, I have your cells, and so the Velcro, I have your food. When the food sticks to your blood cells and it causes everything to stick together, it's a process called agglutination. And your body sees this happening, and it doesn't like it, so it causes an inflammatory reaction to go about removing that process.
Hmm. So that's interesting. You brought up a few interesting points, that things besides your blood have blood type. So that means that the blood type, you mentioned that there's sugars, there's some type of sugar markers on things. So that's what determines your blood type?
Yes, there's actually those very specific sugars. And those sugars can be found in many, many different things. You know, one of those natural products out there that you always hear about, you know, for joint and muscle health, called glucosamine, once that gets broken down into in your stomach by the higher hydrochloric acid in your stomach, it actually turns into free blood type A sugar.
Interesting, yeah. And so then I guess if, like you said, if a bacteria has these markers on them and it looks like a particular blood type and you're another blood type, your body's going to recognize those as foreign and really attack those vigorously. What happens if the bug is very similar to you, and, you know, like say you're a blood type A and you have some microorganism that also has these blood type A antigens on its cell surface, will it kind of stealthily get past your immune system and cause havoc?
I will say yes and no. You know, majority of the time, if you're blood type A and there's a bug that has blood type A sugar on it, it will bind to the receptors, but your body's not going to recognize it as bad. And if it doesn't recognize it as bad, it's going to kind of sit in your immune system, and it's going to brew. It's going to keep brewing and brewing until it becomes to a certain point where it becomes too much that your body finally then responds to it.
Mm-hmm. But that might be critical for, you know, infection and buying time for people, particularly mm-hmm. if it's a serious thing. Interesting. So we have these foods, these lectins in foods found in beans, and I guess that there's lists and lists of what food has what lectin, and that's what kind of one thing that Dr. Diadamo has amassed in a lot of his work is which food has which lectin, and then if a lectin acts like the Velcro that you mentioned and the tennis balls, great, great analogy, then that means that you shouldn't be eating those lectins because they would potentially cause problems in you. So give us some examples of like which lectin could be bad for a particular blood type that people would know.
Sure. One of the big ones is actually from wheat itself. There's a very specific protein in wheat. The lectin is called wheat germ agglutinin. And that wheat germ agglutinin, or WGA, likes to bind right to blood type O. So a lot of times with people who are blood type O, and especially if they have autoimmune conditions or GI or digestive problems, that actually binds right through their blood type and will make the inflammatory process a lot worse.
So you notice so you notice when somebody who's blood type O goes off of wheat that there could be some real good therapeutic effects with that then?
Yes, very much so.
Mm. What conditions have you seen respond to that type of thing in your clinic?
Well, very specifically, I've been seeing a lot of rheumatology patients in the last couple of months, especially a lot of undifferentiated mixed connective tissue diseases and lupus and stuff along those lines. and they're mostly blood type O's, so blood type O's usually have a more predisposition to autoimmune conditions, generally speaking. And when I start taking them off the diet and I start giving them some natural products, their conditions start to get better and better, and eventually goes away in majority of my cases.
Wow. And then what about GI complaints? I know that naturopathic doctors in general, we look at the GI system as a major connector or thoroughfare communicating to the rest of the body. And it goes back to ancient philosophy. If when in doubt, treat the gut, as the old time naturopath said.
Yeah, and I love that heuristic. That's one of those good basic foundations. And it makes a lot of sense as we discover more and more about the research out there and how the body responds to the outside world. We know that a majority of our immune systems are actually inside our GI tract, inside our digestive tract. That's really one of the ways that our body reacts to the outside world, is via the mouth, and the mucous membranes, and all the way through our GI tract to the colon. So when you're eating something bad, it can cause a lot of problems and cause all your resources to get diverted. And it gets diverted in ways that we don't want to get diverted. And the inflammation, which can cause the gas and bloating and constipation. You know, we know very specifically, anyone who's ever had a like chili, vegetarian chili, or a nice turkey chili or something along those time, those types of foods during the wintertime, but sometimes people have reactions like kidney beans and stuff along those lines. Mm-hmm. I know I'm definitely one of these cases. I have a very severe reaction to kidney beans. I get all this gas and bloating that happens afterwards. And that's because that kidney bean has a very, very specific lectin that likes to bind to blood type O's generally and can cause a GI upset.
And that can't be good, certainly for health and absorption of nutrients and all the other wonderful things our GI tract does.
Correct.
Plus, it probably produces some toxins, because don't microorganisms grow on things that aren't properly digested?
That is very much so, and that can cause a whole other host of problems and make everything worse. You know, that's kind of almost going into the world of, you know, ever hear of IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, or mm-hmm. inflammatory bowel disease, these other types of diseases that are very inflammatory based.
Right. So now, you talked a little bit about Swami, which is an interesting concept. And tell us about Swami and nutrition and what actually Swami is and how you use it in your practice.
Swami is a very, very interesting program that was designed by Dr. Peter Diadamo. It kind of takes the blood type diet to the next level, because originally the blood type diet was designed for four different blood types. You have A, B, O, and AB. But as you know, there's more than just four people on this planet. You know, there's 7.5 billion people. So we're really trying to take this concept of individualized medicine so we can actually have precision care down the line is why Dr. Diadamo, or one of the reasons why Dr. Diadamo developed a program called Swami. And it takes all your genetic information that we have of you, so maybe you have different mutations and stuff along those lines. I'll take your blood type information. I'll take your health history, what medications you're on, what supplements that you're on, and also your blood type, and it actually computes a diet based off all those things, along with something called your phenotype. Your phenotype is the end results of your DNA. So it takes all that information and computes out a diet, and most of the time, depending on the statistics of the day, you usually have a better chance of winning the lottery than getting the same meal plan or diet as someone else.
Mm-hmm. And so what types of phenotypic expressions are kind of put into the Swami program in order for you to make a really good individualized diet program?
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of times, you know, some people might not know what a phenotype is, but just a general analogy of phenotype versus genotype. If I'm going to go to an architect and I want to design my dream home, I'm going to get the architect to make me a blueprint. Then I'm going to take that blueprint, I'm going to go to the contractors. The contractor's going to going to look at it and be like, all right, I can get the cedar siding from here. I can get the stone for the driveway from here, et cetera, et cetera. And this is how much it's going to cost. And then they're going to go design my dream home. So, but what happens if my blueprint says I should have cedar siding, but there's no cedar trees left anymore? I end up with vinyl siding. That vinyl siding is the end result of the building process. So that would be my phenotype, would be my cedar siding or my vinyl siding.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm taking all these measurements, I'll be taking like your upper leg measurement compared to your lower leg measurement. I'm looking at the end result of your DNA, that phenotype of your DNA. So I'm looking at specifically like insulin-like growth factor when I'm looking at your leg length. I'm looking at your wrist circumference. I'm looking at fingerprint patterns. I'm looking at leg head length and width, a whole bunch of these different markers that are associated with very specific genes.
Okay, and then that has something to do with your diet. How does that play a role?
Mm-hmm. We know that there's certain foods and certain natural products that can be found in foods that can actually promote the benefits of the genes. So we can kind of turn on or off certain genes, for the most part, with certain foods. Now, there's been a lot of research about green tea, and green tea is great for a lot of different things, but it works. One of the ways that it does work is via methylation. And methylation is turning on or off certain foods. So if you're coming up with a very big predisposition for cancers and stuff along those lines, or you come up with a lot of neurological problems within your presentation to me, I can increase something called methylation. If I increase methylation, it'll help me turn on the good genes and off the bad genes.
Well, that could be really important for cancer and so many other illnesses, Dr. Mm-hmm. Brody. Very interesting. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to, of course, WPKM Bridgeport. I'm on the phone with Dr. Robert Brody, and he's a specialist in biochemical individuality and this type of medicine. Really excited to have him on here. And we're talking about blood type and genetics and diet and its role and how to individualize care. So tell us a little bit about some of the other work that Dr. Diadamo is doing with genetics and genes about the OPUS program.
This is a very, very fascinating topic. It's something that I've been love using on my patients. My patients have been getting great effects from it. But Dr. Diadamo started programming, I guess it was over a year ago at this point, an OPUS 23 program. And what this program allows me to do, and other doctors around the country, is take your raw DNA file. And a lot of times you can get your raw DNA from services such as 23andMe, and you get a whole bunch of just kind of basic reports when you do this through 23andMe. From there, I'm actually able to take that raw DNA from 23andMe and put it into this program, which allows me to look at all the different studies out there on those genes and what natural products can influence those genes, along with, you know, even what medications, what pharmaceutical medications that you might be taking and what side effects they might be causing. And different foods, you know, more beneficial foods that will be helping you turn on or off certain genes and off other genes. And a lot of times, you know, when it comes to the patient, cause that's really what it's all about, is getting the patient better. They find that they finally find the answers to why things have been going wrong for such a long time. One of the first patients that we actually used it on had a long-standing history of kidney stones. Literally 20 years of kidney stones, no one could ever figure out why these were happening. And we put them in the OPUS 23 program, and we were able to isolate a very specific gene that actually makes them have a predisposition for developing kidney stones. We found then a natural product that actually can influence that gene, kind of turn it off or muffle it a little bit, and he has had kidney stones since.
Wow. So what are some of the, give us a couple other patient examples. That's fascinating, because it's kind of using the vast, materia medica that's out there. We know that there's, thousands and thousands of botanicals and nutrients out there and all the nutrition books. We know protocols. I mean, you know, a lot of the old timers developed these great protocols, which they seen work time and time again. Dr. Bastier, Dr. Mitchell, some of the old time naturopathic sages throughout the ages. But you've kind of taken it to a different level, Dr. Brody.
Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting, you know, when it comes to this science stuff and how we balance it out, it's very important to remember to stay rooted within our medicine. You know, science is only in service to the art of medicine. It's one of the things that keeps me grounded. The science, all this stuff that's out there, only helps me paint the picture of that patient, trying to find the right areas I need to concentrate on with my patient work. And so I use it as a tool, and that's just important to tell everyone out there. One of the first patients, or the first couple of patients I used Opus on, was an osteoporosis patient, actually. And she was not getting any benefit from the pharmaceutical drugs that she was on. She kept getting these bad DEXA scans, the bone mineral density scans, and everything. So later, I went to her Opus when she came in to see me. I was able to see that she had all these mutations that were not beneficial for her when her bone mineral density. So I went about finding natural agents that would affect these certain genes to help her bones stay nice, strong, and healthy. And other patients who are currently going on their, you know, cancer treatments, mm-hmm. who they were on certain medications and they were worried about side effects, or they were just about to start medications and they were worried about side effects. I was able to tell them, like, hey, this is a side effect that you might be experiencing because you have these genes and you're on this medication, so you should start working on preventative measures so you don't have to take that, you know, you don't have to take all the other drugs to balance out the side effects of that. You know, looking in deeper in that regard of working on prevention of cancer, if you have a whole bunch of different genes that do not allow you to kill off the cancer cells, it's something good for me to know, looking in my crystal ball, as you will, like, hey, you have an increased risk of developing cancer. Let's work on these things to make sure that you don't go down that path.
So you're kind of looking at what would work in that particular patient based on their genetic individuality. That's brilliant. Yeah, very brilliant way to apply the herbs and apply the knowledge. Does that mean that, you know, everyone with a cold, you know, shouldn't be taking the same antiviral herbs because of their genetic individuality? Does it kind of filter down even to sort of that acute care medicine as well?
I definitely think it can. It's harder to get the research studies for the individualized aspect for those viruses all the time. But a lot of times I have found that there's very specific herbs that people should be taking and very specific herbs that people should not be taking. For an example, you know, as a blood type O, I usually don't end up taking echinacea because echinacea has been shown in my research not to be the best thing for blood type O's. So I'll lean a little bit more toward astragalus. Where I have someone who's a blood type A, I would definitely give them the echinacea, and I might not give them the astragalus.
So it just kind of guides your treatment options or possibilities, trying to individualize, trying to pick the right types of treatments for the right types of patients, whether it's diet or nutrition or herbal medicine. Does it apply to vitamins and minerals also, Dr. Brody?
Yes, it does. We can actually be very specific in that regard. But like, you have these mutations, you should be taking this B vitamin, you shouldn't be taking zinc, you should be taking manganese or something along those lines. So, yes.
Interesting. Tell us a little bit about cancer and some of the interesting studies on cancer and nutrition that have come out recently involving the methylation theory that you talked about, because I think that that's pretty fascinating.
Mm-hmm. We know that there's an increased likelihood of developing cancer, you know, generally if you're a blood type A. We know, especially a subset of blood type A is called blood type A1. There's this kind of genetically predispositioned to have stickier blood, as you will. They usually have a lot of clotting factors and other factors that allow those blood cells to kind of stick to your tissue a little bit easier. So we all have cancer within inside of us every single day, but our body's usually able to balance it out and take care of those cells and get rid of them. The problem comes into play, especially in a blood type A, that a lot of cancer cells, when they're producing cancer, they actually produce a lot of the blood type A antigen that gets stuck out on their cell membranes. Mm. So if you're a blood type A and you have cancer, if your cancer cells are going to produce a lot of blood type A antigens. And since that blood type A on that cancer looks just like the blood type A in your cell, your body's not going to respond to it and go about that killing process very quickly. Compared to if you're blood type O and the cancer cell that's inside of you starts producing blood type A shivers on the outside of it, your body's going to respond and kill it right away.
Yeah.
It has to do, you know, there's a whole bunch of different genetics and genes that are involved with it. You know, the caspase system, which is the normal process of how you go about killing those cells. And there's definitely different natural products that you can use to try to get rid of that. When it comes to methylation, though, methylation is the process of turning on or off your DNA for the most part. So we all know that our DNA is made up of, you know, that double helix. And inside that double helix is a whole bunch of letters and nucleotides in there, you know, where A binds to T and C binds to G. And we can't really change that. That's kind of set in stone. That's what we got from our parents. But on the outside of that, there's that little backbone, the phosphate backbone. That's where the methylation comes into play. We add this little group onto that backbone of that DNA, which can turn on a specific gene or off a specific gene.
Mm.
In a lot of cases in cancer, I want to turn on the specific gene that will cause the cancer to go about the normal death cycle, the death process.
Because it's kind of stuck in this process there. So, all right, we'll take a break. We need to take a quick break. And we'll be back with more with Dr. Brody and individuality of our naturopathic and holistic treatments. And so stay tuned right here to WPKN Bridgeport. Stay with us. And we're back with more of Integrated Wellness. And again, I'm Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperon, here with Maude Josephs. And we are interviewing Dr. Robert Brody. He's a naturopathic physician, has his master's in nutrition, and he's an expert in biochemical individuality and generative medicine. And he's currently with the Institute of Naturopathic Generative Medicine. And also works at the University of Bridgeport, where you actually see patients, right, Dr. Brody?
That is correct.
Good, good. So we'll have to give out your information. So folks, if they're interested, to come in and try the Opus or the Swami, and maybe get their own individualized consultation. We could give out your information towards the end. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about, I remember you wrote a, you did your thesis on very interesting topic, the NAGLACE. Can you explain that to patients and how that is very important? You wrote a, your thesis was an overview of NAGLACE in the treatment and prognosis of cancer and HIV.
Mm-hmm. So NAGLACE is a very specific enzyme that actually works on activating your immune system or not activating your immune system. So generally speaking, we have certain cells in our body, one of which is called macrophage activating factor. One of these cells, called a macrophage, is kind of acts like a shark and kind of floats around your bloodstream and kind of kills any bad cells, kind of eats it and takes it away. And this is one of your normal responses of your innate immune system. These cells are supposed to go around and kind of chomp up the bad stuff and make it go away. When NAGLACE is present, it's an enzyme that doesn't allow the macrophages to do that process. So we have found that this, when this enzyme is very, very high in people, the body has a problem killing off bad cells, activating the immune system, and can cause a whole other host of problems.
Mm. Okay.
And we have found that, you know, there's a couple of natural products that you can use to try to help your immune system not fall into that trap of not being activated.
So you first have to find out if people have a lot of expression of the NAGLACE in their body through certain testings or history, or how would you go about doing that generally?
Usually it's a combination of both history and testing. It's usually a blood test. Mm-hmm. We usually do a venous puncture, so a nice little blood draw from the arm, and we'll send it away to another lab. I think the lab is based in, it's either New Jersey or California.
Okay. And then it comes back, and then you'll prescribe different things to get rid of this substance, which is kind of inhibiting the immune system from working too well.
That's correct.
Cool. I like that. Very, very good approach. Now, what about talking a little bit about cooking and when someone gets one of these diets and they're not familiar with this particular way of eating, how do you educate folks so that they can, you know, eat gluten-free or wheat-free, or if this particular lectin is in this food is no good? Do you help people with the organization of their shopping and their lifestyle so that they're able to implement this complex diet that they get?
Yes, we definitely do. We need that patient compliance to be easy for people so they can follow it and start getting better. You know, and I hate using the word diet because it's really not. It's kind of more of a meal plan or a lifestyle plan.
Mm-hmm.
But when people come in and they come in for the Swami visit itself, you know, we are giving them at the end a whole booklet on the foods that they can eat and the foods that they can't eat and the foods that they should only eat once in a while. So we kind of have this stoplight approach or this traffic light approach to health. Because I really like giving people foods to eat and not necessarily taking foods away from people.
Yeah, because, you know, people are so emotionally attached to foods, I'm sure, as you've seen. You could be the person that says that the patient can't really have birthday cake for their birthday or something, or they're going to a 4th of July picnic, like, you know, this weekend, and they can't have all these different things. So they have to be more proactive to carry their food or have the host maybe make some selections that they can have. It gets to be almost your medicine or your approach gets to be almost like a social science because it's dealing with the social fabric of people and their eating and meals. And, you know, food's a big thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That kind of goes a little bit into my philosophy. You know, I always say I take a three-legged bar stool approach to my philosophy. I try to give the body what it needs. I try to take out the trash. I try to increase vitality. And that increase in vitality part is a little bit harder for some people. You know, I can't really say, hey, you need to take this to increase your vitality. because it usually doesn't work that way. It's usually vitality, the sparkle, the energy, the will to live, and the educational pursuit of making people feel better. And a lot of times, food is a big part of that. We have the 4th of July coming up. Tomorrow is the 4th of July. And during that, we have a very specific thing where you do barbecuing and stuff along those lines. But when I have my patients come in, they're like, hey, I have a birthday party or graduation coming up, and, how am I going to get through this? I tell them, they're like, I want you following my recommendations for my meal plan about 80% of the time. But that means you have about 20% time where you can actually cheat.
Mm.
Because it's important to balance it out. I understand there's a time and place when you're going to want to eat French fries, and maybe French fries aren't the best thing for you.
Yeah.
So, and we just try to make it as easy as possible for people to understand this concept, because a lot of times people come from diets and meal plans where they're so restricted. They only have so many calories. They can't have any alcohol. They can't have any carbohydrates and stuff along these lines. And I don't want that. This is something long-term for people to do. So we actually give them an individualized cell phone app that they can use that has all their food choices on it, so they can load it anywhere in the country.
Mm.
It also allows me to change their diet instantly. If they call me or email me and say, hey, I have this new disease, or I just got sick, what can I do? I can go on their phone. I can update it automatically. We also give everyone a completely individualized recipe guide. So they leave the office with about 100 recipes that they can use to cook for themselves. And along that, with the planning, we actually have on the diet itself, you can log into your specific website, and you can actually plan out what you're going to eat on Monday and what you're going to eat on Tuesday and Wednesday, et cetera.
So it gets real organized. It's not like just giving people a stack of sheets and no training, and they just kind of have to figure it out themselves. That's fabulous that you've kind of created. You and Dr. Diadamo have kind of created a wonderful system for people to follow and make it easy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what kinds of great things have you seen in clinic as far as turning around patients? We talked about a couple of interesting cases, but I love on radio when we talk about cases, because and take us through what the patient was doing beforehand and how. What was their mental state? Were they skeptical of the diet, and how you kind of changed them with these types of approaches that you talked about?
Okay. One of my last patients on Thursday, I believe it was someone who was coming in with an autoimmune disease called Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
Mm.
So an autoimmune process where your body is attacking the thyroid gland. And this has been going on for this individual for years, 2 to 3 years. And, we order blood work, or originally his doctor would order blood work. The process is not getting any better. He's on medications, and while he's on the medications, he's getting some side effects of those medications. And it was just kind of this spiraling circle down. So then he came to me. And by coming to me, after changing his meal plan up, quite a bit, and giving him a very few specific herbs, we were able to control that process and stop the autoimmune antibodies from attacking himself.
Great. Awesome. That's amazing.
Yeah, and it was one of the topics that I talked about with my meetup group that I do once a month at the COE, or at my office, was thyroid health this month.
Mm-hmm.
Very specifically talking about autoimmune processes with the thyroid gland and how people respond to different treatments and why and how they respond to them.
What about fatigue, Dr. Brody? A lot of people are tired. They're not sleeping well. They just are not getting that deep, deep, refreshing sleep, or they're just exhausted all the time, and then they drink stimulants to get their bodies revved up. How can your approach help that?
It's actually a very interesting point. It's something I always forget about, is the fatigue aspect. And the reason I forget about it is it's usually one of those added, I guess you can call it, side effects that goes away when you do this whole natural workup, this natural treatment plan. But it's something that Dr. Diadamo's father originally made the correlation with blood type. He noticed that some people do very well with certain exercises, that some people do very, very well with yoga, where other people do very well with kind of the gym workouts, the aerobic exercises, the running. And when Dr. Diadamo kind of took his father's research and went into the books, went into the research studies, went into the journals to figure out why this was, and he discovered that blood type O's usually make a high amount of something called adrenaline, which is kind of that get-up-and-go neurotransmitter that makes you want to run down the street and kill the woolly mammoth.
Yeah.
And the best way to control this adrenaline is actually these high-intensity exercises. So me being a blood type O, that means that I'm going to be mountain biking. That means that I'm going to be doing a keto. That means that I'm going to be running. That means that I'm going to be going to the weight room. Compared to a blood type A, and blood type A's usually have a hard time with cortisol. And cortisol is the stress hormone.
Uh-huh.
And when this stress hormone goes up in a times of stress in a blood type A, it plateaus at a moderate level. It plateaus at this moderate level for a very long time, which can cause these fatigue symptoms, which can cause weight gain and water retention. And in the research and in my own clinical experience, it's been shown that calming exercises have been beneficial for these people, such as yoga, tai chi, qigong are very good. And it doesn't mean that you can't, if you're blood type A, it doesn't mean that you can't go to the gym. If you're blood type O, it doesn't mean that you can't do yoga. All I'm saying is you get different benefits from these exercises.
Interesting. So even exercise should be individualized at some level.
Uh-huh.
Very interesting. I know you you and I share keen interest in martial arts. Tell us a little bit about your Aikido training.
Yeah, I've been practicing Aikido for about 23 years or so. Most people don't know anything about Aikido, but sometimes I'll say, like, hey, have you ever seen a Steven Seagal movie? I'm like, yeah, I've seen one of those. Well, Steven Seagal, he does Aikido. Especially in his earlier movies, he did a lot of Aikido. And Aikido was the very relatively new martial art, developed around the early 1900s. And it's a very defensive. It's pretty much the only defensive martial art. So I'm working with a partner. And that partner would be doing some kind of attack to the defender or to myself. And I would divert that energy and I'll allow them to disperse that energy and go to the ground themselves.
Right. Yeah. I enjoy working out with you when we do our self-defense club, which we do on campus here, which is great. So tell us a little bit about, as we end the program here in the last few minutes, tell us a little bit about how folks can contact you if they want to find out more information about individualized nutrition, individualized treatment, individualized botanical medicine, healthy living, and all the wonderful things that we talked about today.
Well, the easiest way probably to contact me would be visiting my website, which is Brody, B-R-O-D-Y, N as in Nancy, D as in doctor, .com. You can also like me on Facebook, which is at BrodyND. And I always post articles there every single day. This new research that's coming out about natural health topics. I usually write articles about once a month as well on different health topics. I just recently wrote one on thyroid health and bacon, actually.
And what? I didn't catch that one.
I just wrote an article on bacon and pork and ham, those specific
questions,
and how to interact with your diet and lifestyle.
And I assume that those aren't so good, because it's interesting that many cultures throughout the world, even for religious or spiritual reasons or other reasons, if I even look at the ancient Germans, the German Heilpraktikers, they all sort of said that, you know, the swine wasn't really good food. What's your take on all that?
I would generally agree with that. You know, there's this whole vitality aspect that we need to balance out when it comes to these things. But the science is showing that within pork itself, or within anything coming from a pig, there's very specific lectins that like to bind and confuse your body and confuse your immune system and cause inflammatory processes. And in this article that I wrote last month, it talks about very specifically those types of lectins.
Huh. Yeah, and I find that it seems to, like you mentioned, concur with you, cause lots of inflammation and inflammatory things. And it seems to be, if we look at Dr. Rekowig's work, he called them sewage toxins, which are actual specific toxins. Maybe he was referring to the lectin possibly in the pork and how it was detrimental to folks. Very interesting. Well, thank you very much for your fascinating discussion on blood type and individualized nutrition. Swami, the opus. I look forward to having you on again to talk about more stuff and continuing your research, and wish you lots of luck.
Thank you so much, Dr. D. Z, and have a great weekend.
Okay, take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Sure. And that was Dr. Robert Brody, Personalized Natural Medicine. And we're really excited to bring cutting-edge guests and topics and practitioners to you right here on the Natural House Call Integrated Wellness Program. And I guess we'll play a couple musics and we'll sign out. So stay with us.